6:22. This is 1320 WILS. So Donald Trump's executive order on immigration now being challenged by the courts. In fact, a U.S. District Court judge in Detroit has now issued a permanent injunction dealing with the immigration ban. We're joined by Greg Roman, director of the Middle East Forum in Washington, D.C., to get his thoughts on what's happening here. Greg, great to have you here on WILS.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, what do you think, how much of the ban from the executive order is going to be able to withstand court action?
So I think that when we look at the Equal Protection Clause and the different elements of constitutionality of the ban itself, they should have gone through the Office of Legal Counsel, which approves the executive authority to the Department of the Justice Department, prior to them issuing it. Mm-hmm. This was rolled out a week after the inauguration. There wasn't a lot of legal preparation for it. But while the spirit of the action was correct, I think it'll have to be modified, either through legislation or through comporting with the Immigration and Nationality Act.
So where are the problems with the executive order as it stands now?
So right now, the president has broad authority that's been backed by different Supreme Court decisions on who he's allowed to let into the country, how many people, and based on what different classifications that he sees as being the right jurisprudence. Mm-hmm. And this is going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. But I think that when you have a religious test, when you have a ethnic test, when you have anything that goes against some of the larger federal laws, whether it's Title VI dealing with education or some of the other anti-discrimination statutes that were passed in the 1960s and 70s, okay, you have to be able to offer another reason, like national security, which gives you a broad caveat of what you're allowed to and what you're not allowed to in.
But well, is that not the grounds that he put these executive orders out there on?
He put them together, but he also specified it according to national origin. He also put it forward into your citizenship. And if you remember when the visa waiver program was passed in late 2016, after they had the Paris incidents that took place and were trying to find a way to ensure that individuals who were able to get citizenship in France or European Union countries wouldn't be able to use that passport to get to the United States, they started not just excluding individuals who live in the seven countries that have now had a 90-day ban put on them, but also those individuals who had emanated from them, and they may have had dual citizenship otherwise. That's why you have 60,000 people affected by this ban. So I think we have to look at, instead of framing the conversation about whether Muslims from these countries are allowed in or minorities from Muslim-majority countries, we should be looking at the difference between who's an Islamist, someone who's trying to actually use Islamic law for political reasons, versus someone who just may be an adherent of the religion.
Yeah, but isn't the problem that many times the people just can't tell the difference, especially when we don't have clear background information from countries like Syria and Somalia and so on?
Right. That's why I think when Donald Trump says extreme vetting, you have to pay attention to the literature that's available to see what you can actually do. My organization put out a paper on Saturday classifying how you are able to discern between an Islamist and a Muslim, including looking at some of the more restrictions that have been available, like asking for social media information, asking 95 to 100 questions about their origin, their beliefs. And even if they're able to get through that, you have methods right now that exist, for instance, that the Israeli government uses, that I think would be considered profiling here, but I think would be constitutionally acceptable, especially when we're asking about people's political beliefs that may lead to security concerns here.
So these wouldn't be a ban, but it would turn into a very lengthy process. Is that accurate?
That's right. And let's remember that the ban itself that has been put in place is temporary. There was no permanent ban instituted. There was no indefinite ban instituted on any country. Mm-hmm. On Syria, it's 60 days, and the other countries, it's 90 days, in terms of the specific exclusions which were listed. Mm-hmm. So let's get our system in place. Let's remove politics from it. Let's put security first. And then once you've had an opportunity to revise the current standards, I think that these restrictions will be lifted.
Okay, but I'm curious, that if you are dealing with countries that really don't even have a like Syria, where there's no real civil infrastructure, how would you even get these details on social media or even know if anything they're saying is true?
If the individuals aren't willing to answer the questions, and even if they do answer everything correctly according to the way in which you have screening, there's other ticks that you can look at. Mm-hmm. For instance, there was a story about ISIS capturing two Syrian passport machines, one from the Interior Ministry of Syria in Raqqa, another in Deir al-Zor. And what we were able to do in terms of the U.S. security services was find the passport numbers that were being used to issue hundreds of thousands of fake passports going to Syrian refugees that were flooding Europe. And there was a blanket classification of who wasn't allowed into the country. So what you do is you find the government that you're trying to have a relationship with in terms of processing this, even though it would be hard to have a relationship with the Syrian government or with the Iranians. And if they want to play ball, their citizens can come into your country. If they don't, they're excluded.
The Donald Trump's idea of setting up safe zones rather than opening our doors to the refugees in Syria and so on, is that a preferable option in your view?
It's a preferable option, and it's also something that's codified by international law. If you look at the Charter of the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees, UNHCR, you'll see that in their Declaration of Rights for Refugees, which was adopted as a UN convention 50, 60 years ago, you'll see that the first line says it's preferable that refugees are able to return from the lands from where they came, and only if that's not possible, they are then asked to be able to settle in a third country.
Yeah. Why didn't we do that long ago, though? Why is it taking until now?
Because the West didn't have the political will to be able to go. Remember, we had the long walk on the White House lawn between Dennis McDonough and Barack Obama, and he came back and decided to go against his red line declaration.
Right.
This systemic issue could have been dealt with if we just had the courage in the previous administration. People, you know, may not be happy with where we're at right now, but at least Trump is offering policy options that may end the systemic bleeding of refugees from the region.
Yeah. Is it bringing in all these refugees, is that a serious national threat to us, you think?
I think you have to be able to classify them rather than just looking at them as a blanket classification of refugees. Those who are having disabilities, young children, widows, people who have been tortured, those who have been victims of war crimes, mm-hmm. ethnic minority groups. You have to be able to separate them from the guys who are between 18 and 40 years old who are leaving the country, not because they have to, but because they're looking for a better way of life.
Well, I'm sure they'd claim they're victims of war crimes themselves, right?
Yeah, but you have to be able to look a little bit deeper than that and be able to have a much higher litmus test rather than just allowing them in for the sake of meeting a quota.
It's Greg Roman, director of the Middle East Forum based in Washington, D.C., right here on 1320 WILS. Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
When we come back, we're going to talk about why Democrats are basically doing everything they can to stop Scott Pruitt from becoming the next head of the EPA, and why climate change may now become the most controversial issue in Washington, D.C., especially after so many years where it's been accepted as understood science by the politicians in D.C., that it's accepted as the truth that humans are affecting the climate. That could now be completely it's certainly going to come up for discussion, but it could be completely denied very soon. We'll get into that. Also, we'll talk about the Super Bowl and how businesses are preparing to spend $5 million for 30 seconds. That's next.